This is achieved in many cases through group learning sessions, often similar to our school or university days. Advanced beings or teachers are there to help each group, and a lot of discussion and analysis take place, usually in informal situations. Those in spirit can also maintain close links with activities on Earth, on both a personal and community level. To emphasize a previous point, spirits are not allowed to interfere in our lives, but once given permission by the guides, they can make subtle suggestions and influences, using the power of thought communication, dreams, signs, and many other means. Not only is this contact on a personal level, but the influence from spirit can have a larger impact on earthly life. John Dingwall spoke of the current concern in the spirit realms of the deteriorating relationship between the Eastern and Western nations. They have many discussions in spirit about the number of potential conflicts, with many countries on the brink of war at any one time. Their big concern is that in a lot of these troubled areas, particularly in the Middle East, many people have nothing to lose and everything to gain in their battle against the West, which makes it so difficult for everyone involved. While adhering to their policy of non-interference, John said, there is a huge push by spirits working on influential leaders to offer guidance and help in areas of tolerance and understanding with other countries. He also acknowledged the influence of religions in this situation, saying that religious organizations on Earth are far more powerful than many of us realize. The question of potential intervention from the spirit world is also a hot topic in the afterlife. An important point raised in these discussions is that in most cases events must be allowed to run their course, so that people can learn their lessons out of the hardship that comes from making their mistakes. John gave the example of a sick child suffering and finally dying amid grief and anger, with people saying, if there is a God, how could he let this happen? Hard as it may be for the family concerned, the other side of the story is the good that may come from such a death. Lives can change as a result of the child's passing, with parents starting reform groups or medical science being triggered to find answers. These things happen for a reason. In the case of huge conflicts in the world, a positive result may occur when countries band together to make changes. Another popular topic of discussion in the afterlife is the syndrome of instant gratification in today's world. People want a quick fix to their problems, which is why many of them rely so heavily on gurus, media experts, psychics, and other instantly available resources, instead of going within themselves for their answers. The concern is that too many people are losing their patience. If things are not done immediately, they want to know why. They are not looking for answers in their head or in their heart. It is much easier to find the solution on the internet. This applies particularly to children and young people who are taking the easy way out, using technology instead of thinking about the whole question. This kind of escapism can be damaging in the long term. Author Helen Brown defines this syndrome beautifully in her book After Cleo Came Jonah. One, she describes meandering through a sea of impassive faces, bent over little boxes, white wires dangling from their ears, attached to realities that didn't exist, connected to the abstract but disconnected from their living. The apprehension in the afterlife is that our complete reliance on technology is a potential problem and may be found to be disruptive to everyday life in a huge way in the not too distant future. If computers around the world suddenly crash, for whatever reason, our lives would be thrown into chaos. When I thought about how reliant we have become on computers, the impact made my head spin. Everything from basic everyday needs, such as food and fuel distribution, water and communications to banking, commerce, air travel, and utility organizations are highly dependent on computer technology. The list goes on and on. No wonder they are concerned for us in the afterlife. The elders in the world of spirit sent a special message via John's team that they are troubled about the way we are generally handling world affairs and the environment. They said we are living in a strange time in which we are on the cusp of some wonderful spiritual advances but are being adversely affected by greed, materialism, and lack of concern for others. Our young people are not building a solid base to sustain themselves, with their constant need for instant gratification through material possessions, self-image, and technology. 12. The body beautiful. After I took a 2-month break from writing over the festive season, it was difficult to get out of holiday mode and get started again, despite Judy's words of encouragement. I live in a tropical coastal area, and the summer weather is more conducive to being laid back than industrious. Feeling blocked, I put out a request to my guide M for inspiration and motivation, and received a very clear dream message to meditate with the 2 large crystals I had obtained while at John of God's Healing Center in Brazil. These crystals, which I wrote about in Afterlife, were a special gift from John of God himself, and helped me raise my vibrations and connect with higher realms. And this was an obvious solution to my New Year's lethargy. All I needed was a spiritual boot in the backside. M was waiting for me once I went deep into meditation using the crystals, and our communication resumed. While we have free will to conduct our lives as we choose, those in spirit are always sending us messages to guide us whenever we need it, but it also helps to ask for guidance when we are in a quandary. Most of the time we are too busy with our daily lives to listen to our spirit helpers, but they never seem to become impatient with us. Their guidance can take many subtle forms: dreams, signs that have a personal meaning, a flash of inspiration, or even a song on the radio. In the months after Judy passed over, I would sometimes pause and wonder where she was at that moment. On a couple of occasions, her favorite song, "I Will Survive," suddenly came on the car radio. Once I was so overwhelmed, I was forced to pull over to a side street, tears pouring down my face. It was the perfect survival evidence I needed. On other occasions, Joe Cocker's song "You Are So Beautiful" would be played at a very appropriate moment. I knew Judy was there with me, as this was the song I played for her at her funeral. Sometimes spirit needs to get through to us in a more dramatic fashion when it is obvious that we are not taking heed, such as when we lose a job, or have a relationship break up. Our guides and spirit helpers know that we will be forced to be introspective at these transformational times in our life, and they have a better chance of getting through to us. A friend of mine who practices numerology receives messages from license plates of nearby cars when she is looking for guidance, which has proved very reliable over the years. Our guides can only offer advice, they cannot do it for us, as that would defeat the purpose of our life. However, they usually gently steer us along certain paths so that we can link with our destiny points in each lifetime. This can result in what we often regard as chance meetings, coincidences, being in the right place at the right time, and, of course, encountering people and events that change our lives. M had already confirmed that while we have free will, there are certain destiny points that we have agreed to in spirit as we prepare for each incarnation. Another growing concern the elders in the afterlife have for us is our infatuation with our physical image to the detriment of our spiritual growth. While those who could afford it have always been concerned with fashion and personal appearance through the ages, it is now getting out of proportion, particularly in Western societies. The body beautiful is for many people a lifelong obsession. To illustrate this point, M showed me a vision of a weekly newspaper I usually read that has a section called Body and Soul. For a long time I used to play a game of hunt for the soul stories, which are usually swamped by articles and advice about body image, diet tips, recipes, beauty products, weight loss programs, and the like, with just a token soul-related article and the obligatory astrology column. After a while I gave it up as a fruitless exercise. Of course, commercial media content is all dependent on advertising, with stories about our physical image attracting the dollars, while sadly there are not many major advertisers queuing up to sponsor spiritual features. In fact, most mainstream media coverage seems to ignore or simply ridicule spiritual and metaphysical stories, which goes a long way toward explaining public apathy to these subjects. An image of a motor vehicle flashed into my mind with the message that our love of cars reflects this situation. Many people are so obsessed with their cars, to the detriment of other aspects of their life, but they can lose perspective of their vehicle's basic purpose. As M pointed out, a car is merely a vehicle for transportation, and needs the energy of our presence behind the wheel to put it into motion. He compared this to our physical bodies, which are merely vehicles for our spirit to experience each lifetime. The key point he made is that our spiritual energy is the main reason that the body was created in the first place. Sure, we need to keep our vehicle well maintained, but the spirit, which is eternal, will outlast the body that is allocated to us in each lifetime. Passing over is akin to trading in your old vehicle, which has outlived its purpose, and waiting for the appropriate replacement. Understanding and developing the power that lies at our very heart is vital over the longer term of our life. To do this, we need to go inside our vehicle far more than we do, and not just concern ourselves primarily with polishing the outer casing. Exploring our spiritual depths takes a conscious effort, and it is far easier to look in the mirror to make ourselves feel good and be presentable to the world at large. What we do not always take into account is that, apart from a few close friends and family, the vast majority of people we see every day are not really concerned with what we are wearing or how we look, unless we draw attention to ourselves through such things as unseemly behavior, body piercing, or ugly tattoos. They are mostly too busy thinking about their own image and worrying about what we think about them to pay much notice to our appearance. Our outer body will age with the years, but the inner riches we all possess will always stay fresh and new, constantly updating and improving with age and experience. Our soul has every answer that we ever need safely locked inside. When we open our heart and connect with our soul through meditation, the power of the spirit world is available to us. We all possess intuition, we just need to learn to access and trust it. After all, intuition basically means learning from within. Using your intuition can help you every day in many basic ways, but does not mean you have to become a psychic to be able to use it. As I was leaving to go to the bank today, I heard that the town was very crowded, traffic was really hectic, and it would be very difficult to park. I tuned into my inner knowing and asked for assistance and visualized a parking spot in a particular street just around the corner from the bank. Trusting my inner knowing, I drove straight there, and, lo and behold, that exact empty spot was waiting for me. By accessing and trusting our inner knowing, we can all find anything from a simple parking spot to our purpose in life, and indeed much more. Part 2. The Mists of Time. 13. M speaks up. If you want to know your past life, look into your present condition. If you want to know your future life, look at your present actions. The wonderful thing about my guide M is that he is always there for me when I need his sage advice. I doubt that I could have written my first book without his guidance. One night before going to sleep, I put a question to him about what was important to include in this book. I awoke the next morning with his answer ringing in my mind. Investigate another of your past lives and between life experiences. M had already guided me through my most recent past life as Brian, something I wrote about in Afterlife. So many people who read the book have identified with Brian's between life soul journey, so M's suggestion hardly came as a surprise. He was probably shaking his head, metaphorically speaking, wondering why I hadn't thought of it myself. There is a popular saying that you need to make the most of this life, as you only live once. However, when we start to research the fascinating subject of reincarnation, the facts are hard to dispute. A multitude of evidence has proved to me that reincarnation is a natural part of the life cycle of human beings. Once we accept that we are a spiritual energy powering a human body, it is easy to understand that our physical form is our vehicle for an earthly experience. When the body perishes, the spirit returns to the world of spirit, where it originally came from, and here it goes through a rest and re-evaluation period before embarking on another adventure. During this intervening period, many spirits in the afterlife can access other lives they have led, as part of their ongoing education program. When given permission by their guides, they are able to view the Akashic records, which are stored in the Hall of Records. Far from being a kind of TV show, they are interactive, as people experience for themselves the effects their activities and behavior in past lives have had on others they have encountered. It is a very important part of our soul development in the afterlife. We are obliged to feel the emotional pain that we have caused others so that we can take full responsibility for our actions. Especially if we managed to avoid these responsibilities in our last earth life. When the timing is right, it is always delightful to see things fall into place smoothly. I believe in synchronicity, as opposed to coincidence, and it was working well for me in this instance. I was telling Berlinda Grace, a clairvoyant and author who has appeared on my radio program Radio Out There, about my regression plans, saying that I was looking for a good past life therapist. Belinda immediately recommended that I ring Colleen, a past life and between life regression therapist, with whom she had reconnected only the day before. Surprise, surprise. When I contacted Colleen, she told me that she had been trained in the Michael Newton method as well as being a qualified hypnotherapist. Michael Newton, the author of books such as Journey of Souls, has developed an international training program for life between lives therapy. We agreed that it would be best if Colleen did not read Afterlife, as it could influence the way she conducted my regression. The only details I gave her were that I wanted to visit a past life or lives, relevant to my research and current life, and then follow my spirit through on each occasion as it returned into the afterlife. Colleen told me it would probably be about a 4-hour session, starting mid-morning, and to eat a good breakfast that day to sustain me. I wasn't sure at the time whether she thought we might go back to a turbulent time when I would need all the strength I could muster. Maybe even visit a life where I died of starvation. Anyway, I ate a hearty breakfast before heading off for my regression. I'm glad I took her advice, as it turned out to be quite an exhausting session. Many people think having a past life regression would be a fun thing to do, a kind of Hollywood time tunnel experience. However, a trained therapist will usually perform a regression only to provide answers to questions and situations that may be causing blockages or major concerns in their current life, or, as was my case, to answer relevant questions about their life path. Some of the experts in the field of past life research originally stumbled upon this form of therapy accidentally, while trying to find answers to emotional and physical problems in their patients' lives. One of Australia's pioneers in this field, Peter Ramster, a clinical psychologist, asked his patient under hypnosis to go back to a time in life when the problem first began. Peter was perplexed when his patient went back several hundred years, to a previous life. His initial skepticism melted away when the patient not only identified the cause of her problem, but subsequently started healing. Realizing he was onto something that could benefit many others, Peter encouraged other clients to use hypnotherapy to discover the source of their problems. A man of many talents, he was so delighted with the results of this therapy that he went on to produce 2 television specials, called The Reincarnation Experiments, which have been screened worldwide. Peter also wrote a book, The Search for Lives Past, and is now regarded as a leader in this field. I was tempted to ask Peter to perform a regression for my research, but as he is a good friend and was working with Judy before she passed, I felt it best to work with a therapist with whom I have no personal connection. It would ensure that any information I was able to access was 100% genuine and could not be influenced in any subconscious way by the practitioner. Little did I realize the surprises that were in store for me as we swept aside the mists of time. 14. Down the time tunnel. As I drove to Colleen's rooms, I was feeling a little apprehensive about the session. 4 hours is a long time to be sitting in a chair in a state of hypnosis, and none of my previous sessions had been nearly as long. The big question playing in my mind was where would I go in the regression? I had already asked M to ensure that I did not revisit my time as Brian, as that would have been a waste of energy. Knowing that I have had many lives as a warrior, I wondered if I would once again end up with a sword or a spear in my hands in some bloody battle. A typical past life regression starts with being taken back gradually in a very relaxed state similar to meditation, beginning with memories from early times in this life to get the subconscious mind moving in the right direction. Once we are in deep trance, our higher self, the part of the soul that is not attached to the physical body, is able to communicate directly with the therapist. Initially, I went back to early childhood and enjoyed some memories from those innocent days. I was raised in a loving family situation, typical of post-war times. My father had been away combating the Japanese invaders, and I did not meet him until I was 3 years of age. He was a very quiet, conservative man who was always there to support his family, although sadly he and I never really became as close as I would have liked, perhaps because of the early separation. Not surprisingly, my mother and I were much closer. I had a very innocent childhood and, apart from some bullying incidents when I first went to school, it was a happy time that I looked back on. Once in a blissful state of mind and body, I was taken back to my time in the womb. Initially I felt very cramped, but was relieved that I didn't have to stay there as the fetus grew. My spirit could come and go quite happily. When asked where I went, I replied, back home. I also explained that, at first, I came into my new body when I needed to get to know my mother, which felt like about 6 months into the pregnancy. The return home was mainly to communicate with my guide to do last-minute preparation for the life ahead. I also was able to spend some time with my soul family and say my farewells to them before joining the new body full-time. Other research that I have done into the time we have in the womb shows that most souls come and go during the pregnancy, with some only finally committing to joining the body fully just before birth. As with all afterlife experiences, each person's story is unique. Some souls like to be with their new mother for long periods in a kind of bonding time. M tells me that other souls choose to enjoy a rest period in the womb before birth, often because they are about to have a very hectic life ahead. Meanwhile, back with little Barry in the womb, I describe the feeling as not a new experience, but a little strange after the freedom of the spirit world to be contained in a tiny, tiny body. I was asked to connect with my soul energy, sometimes referred to as the oversoul but mainly known as the higher self. The aim was to identify what I had been told in spirit, as it would be important in the new life about to unfold. My soul energy replied, to learn and grow. Other themes then emerged. The word communicate was important, as was the idea of having fun this time around. There would also be many lessons to learn around relationships. I was able to recall some of my soul briefing, during which my guide had told me that it was important for me to be born at that time, in the middle of World War II, as I had a lot of past history around war and fighting. This lifetime had a feeling of being connected to a war, but at the same time I did not have to be part of it, beyond the early environment. My previous between-life experience as Brian, described in Afterlife, revealed that I had completed my experiences as a warrior and had finally accepted the huge waste that war created. An important part of this next life was to help people understand the futility of war, as well as to gain further understanding for myself of the waste and human degradation it created. The information from my higher self during this womb time kept on coming. The reason I had experienced so many past lives as a warrior was a deep-seated anger that needed to be released. Indeed, there were still some karmic aspects around anger that would need to be worked through in this life, but this would play out around relationships instead of war. I also chose this body, even though it had eye problems, because of the experiences that were in store for me in this life. I had to discover and see things for myself. This lifetime would also be much longer than several of my previous ones, which were cut short for various reasons. The date and time of my birth were chosen for me and have a deep significance and will help my soul in this life. The question of lives in other worlds arose in my soul briefing, but so far I have chosen to learn my lessons on Earth. Maybe I will graduate to other worlds for future lives. My soul energy acknowledged an intention to experience another world, and when further questioned replied that I would like to experience a world of peace, A life where there would be a more loving environment. There are apparently many such worlds in the universe. My soul energy sent a message to Barry in the present time saying, get it all done. Achievements and experiences are all important in this lifetime, but above all make sure of completions. With that helpful message about my life as Barry, I was then immersed into a deeper part of my soul memory to continue the exploration into other incarnations. Listening back a couple of months later to the recording of this very long regression, I was constantly amazed by the detailed information that emerged from my subconscious soul memory. Many of the events and conclusions were completely different from what I had anticipated beforehand, and the details about my past lives were intense. Before my regression, I was fully expecting that I would be going back to a time in ancient Egypt or Rome, which are two of my favorite periods of history. But it was not to be. I certainly did not anticipate a life in the wilds of a jungle. 15. Meeting Kalinga. I slipped easily into a past lifetime, and when prompted heard my name being called. It sounded like Kalinga. I looked down in my mind's eye and saw I had the slender brown legs of a woman, wearing sandals on my feet and a kind of dress that ended below my knees. I was not asked to describe her facial or body features. But I had the feeling that she was small of stature and slight in build. At the time I connected with Kalinga, she had been on Earth for 22 summers and was preparing for some kind of ceremony. I strongly felt I was in a jungle area of South America and the year was 740. There was an active volcano near the village where she lived. Kalinga had long, dark hair and was wearing a simple type of indigenous jewelry around her neck and wrists for the purpose of the ritual. It was described as a kind of marriage ceremony, not to another person, but to a deity. The name of the god to whom Kalinga was being bound sounded to me like Baal, and she had been chosen for the honor as a child by the high priest in agreement with her father, who was the tribal chief. For many years prior to the ceremony, Kalinga had been learning and preparing for this day. She had to learn the beliefs of her religion as well as all the invocations, and pray to the gods every day. It had been decided that Kalinga would also be a healer, so she was taught the healing arts by a very old wise woman. This included mixing the potions made from herbs and many other ingredients found in the jungle. At times, healers also used small amounts of animal blood as part of the mix. Each potion had to look and smell right and had to be accompanied by the appropriate prayers for it to be successful. So Kalinga had to learn the exact words to use in healing to bring in the power of the gods, which she was adamant were a very important part of the process. She also learned how to communicate with the ancestors in the spirit world as part of her training. There was also an ethical side to these teachings that needed to be embraced if they were to be successful. Healing needed to be for the highest good of all concerned. Kalinga emphasized that she was not special, and that there were others who were also trained by the wise woman in the art of healing. After the ceremony, Kalinga was formally recognized as a healer and was then able to work independently, visiting other areas nearby to help the sick. However, she never lost contact with the wise woman who remained her mentor. When asked how she felt about being a healer, Kalinga replied simply, "It is my destiny, it is what I must do." Kalinga enjoyed helping people, especially children, and this made her life much more enjoyable. Kalinga said that because she had committed to a life of service, she could never have a marriage partner or bear children. Part of her duties as a healer also involved working with people when they died, preparing the body and then helping conduct the ceremony, a life celebration that included much dancing after which the bodies were burned. Kalinga had to make a mask for the dead person to wear in the death ceremony to help them say goodbye and go from this life to the next. The mask also helped the families in their grief, as it was an important part of the ceremony conducted by the priest. Each mask was unique to the person who had just died and was burned with the body. Kalinga described the creative process for each mask as being intuitive. She would close her eyes, and an image of the appropriate mask would be given to her by the gods and the spirits of the ancestors of the deceased. This visualization was also part of the training that Kalinga underwent before her graduation ceremony. Kalinga always knew she was destined to be a healer. When she was very young, her grandmother died, and she was fascinated by the death ceremony, especially her mask, and Kalinga wanted to know more. In many ways, she felt that was the start of her apprenticeship, and that this childhood interest could have been part of the reason that she was chosen by the priest. Life in the village was simple, even for the family of the chieftain.